fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Help me if you can. I've got to get back to the house if you call by one. You'd be surprised, there's so much to be done. Count all the bees in the hive. Chase all the clouds from the sky. Back to the days of Christopher Robin and Pooh.
Today on Route 51, we look at early childhood development, which has been identified as an urgent need and a top call to action in the just-released United Way Life Report, the ninth report that's been compiled locally in the past 18 years. LIFE stands for Local Indicators for Excellence, examining the strengths and challenges facing the residents of central Wisconsin. The two-year study included a survey of 800 Marathon County residents and an analysis of data covering demographics, unemployment and income, community safety, basic needs and supports, health and wellness, environment and energy, and education. I'm Glenn Moberg. This year's report emphasizes early childhood development because of research that shows when children don't get a good start on life and don't learn to read and write at an early age, they are less likely to succeed and more likely to live in poverty, to abuse drugs and alcohol, and even end up in prison. Our guests today are Dean Dietrich, an attorney with the Ruder Ware Law Firm and the chair of the Early Years Coalition of Marathon County. Also, Julie Burmish, a speech pathologist with the Wausau School District and vice chair of that coalition. And we've also got Sandy Ellis, a consultant on early childhood development and president of Prevention Solutions of Junction City. Now, before we open up our panel discussion, we're going to first hear from Dr. Dipesh Navasaria. He's an assistant professor of pediatrics at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health and a spokesman for Reach Out and Read, a program which makes literacy promotion a standard part of pediatric primary care. Dipesh Navasaria was the keynote speaker last week at the Life Report Forum at UW Marathon County in Wausau. I had a chance to sit down with him at that time, and we recorded this interview.
Reading, I think, is the gateway to so many different things. Reading is it's the way we fundamentally learn. We decode text. Even when you're looking at iPhone screens or whatever, you're often looking at text. So if you don't have good fluent reading skills by the fourth grade, it's a lot harder to be able to really derive anything from the rest of the education system.
What can parents do if they have a newborn child or a toddler in the household?
Mm-hmm. I would say read with them. Take out a board book, share, even if it's 10 minutes a day, so that they're familiar with the idea and notion of what a book is. Let them handle the book. Let them control the book, especially if it's a toddler. If they want to read the story backwards, go for it. If they want to point at pictures, if you want to name things for them, that's fine. You don't have to read the story itself. But what happens is that child learns that books are a good thing. And when they show up in pre-K or kindergarten, then the teacher pulls out a book. They say, oh, a book, and it means something, as opposed to what I've sadly seen, a four-year-old who has no idea even how to open the book because they've not been exposed to this. That gap that we talk about in our state, the achievement gap, it starts in infancy. It's not starting in second grade. It's not starting even at age five.
So getting a very early start is crucial.
It is. It is incredibly crucial. The other thing is it builds a relationship between that child and that parent. Even the parent who is working multiple jobs and is stressed out and trying to make rent payments and food insecurity and, you know, all those sorts of things, 5 minutes of having your child in your lap and reading together helps build a good, secure relationship. It lets the child hear their parents' voice in a way that's not that, you know, annoyed, stressed out, you know, voice that all parents do at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives them some way to connect. I know with my own kids, they're 10 and 11 years old now. We still read together most nights when I'm home. And they love it because we're just snuggled up on the couch together.
What do you tell parents who tell you, look, I'm working three jobs, we're barely making the rent, I just don't have time, my child is asleep by the time I get home? And that's a pretty common phenomenon these days, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and it's something I see in my patients' families all the time. But there's some adult around. It doesn't have to be the parent. It can be a grandparent. It can be an aunt or uncle. It could even be an older sibling. And then those times when you do have a day off or whatever the case may be, you know, make the time that you're with them at least some small piece of that. I don't like using the word quality time because I think it just adds another pressure to parents, but saying do that little bit of interaction, do that rhyming, do singing together, do that face-to-face play because that's so important to your child's development. It is relationships that drive development, not anything else.
Does this lack of reading, is that something that puts lower income children at even more of a disadvantage than they would be otherwise?
It certainly does. By age four, the lowest income kids have a 30 million word gap in terms of how many words are directed at them total compared to their more affluent peers. That's 30 million fewer inputs trying to mold and shape their brains, their neurons, their vocabulary, all those things. They are already well behind, and we see this in their expressive their receptive vocabulary, their ability to understand words. Again, the achievement gap, we see it back there. It's not later on.
Once these kids get into school, how easy is that to turn around? Say they're in fourth grade, fifth grade, and they can't read the way they're supposed to be able to read.
Mm-hmm. So assuming that there's not an unidentified problem like a dyslexia or some other issue, it's possible to turn around. It's a lot harder. For one thing, that child has already struggled enough in school that, honestly, their self-esteem it becomes an issue. They've already told themselves, I can't do this. I'm a failure. And guess what? Often their parents had similar experiences, so they've heard that same language come out of their parents' mouth, and everyone just says, well, you know, it's just that family. Well, no, it's that this child didn't have the right start to right interactions, etc. Trying to undo it in fourth grade is possible, but it's a heck of a lot harder than trying to do things right the first time in early infancy. But it's not a given that, oh, now it's too late.
You know, we hear a lot about income inequality mm-hmm. today. Is this something that tends to keep poor people poor and rich people rich? The fact mm-hmm. that children from poor families are often at a significant disadvantage to children who grew up in an environment where the parents have a lot of time, a lot of free time, a lot of time to spend with the child.
Yeah, you know, it's not even so much the financial income, although that's certainly a part of it. It's the time poverty, as you just articulated there. The parent who is unable to find the time to spend with their child, that's really where we're seeing the issue here. Certainly, if you have the income, then it's a lot easier to do those things. Keep in mind that across all income levels in our country, only 48% of kids are being read to on a daily basis under age five. Even when you go to wealthy families, some of those kids are not getting daily reading. We know from data from some time ago that even in the richer families, kids aren't necessarily being talked to quite as much as they could. It's certainly a lot better than in poor families. And I worry that now with increased handheld devices and other screens, we're seeing even less interaction going on, even in the richest families. So this actually cuts across all income mm-hmm. levels. It's not just those in poverty. But I do think the impact is probably greater for those that are least resource rich because they don't have the slack to say, now I'm going to spend those few moments with my child because, gosh, I need to take that extra job because we might be homeless if I don't do that.
Is there a correlation between social problems, say, people who end up in prison and reading scores?
There certainly is. Unfortunately, we can. There was a New York Times editorial last week that used the phrase that we can predict with depressing accuracy what a child's trajectory will be like based on their elementary school achievement. And there's one example of a state that at one point previously used elementary school reading and math scores to predict prison bed needs. And the issue isn't, is anyone actually doing that now? The issue is, could they? And sadly, you know, the connection is pretty clear.
Tell us about the Reach Out and Read program. Mm-hmm.
Reach Out and Read is a program that is based in primary care offices, pediatricians and family medicine doctors, anyone who does regular primary care for kids. Starting at their six-month-old well-child visit and going all the way through their regular checkups until age five, We give them a book to read, a book to take home and keep. We encourage the family to share books together, and we offer a few tips like, you know, point out pictures, use vocabulary, ask them what will happen next, depending on the age. And whenever possible, literacy-rich waiting rooms with books and reading volunteers and things like that. The other part of it is that, for me, it's an important tool as the pediatrician. I give that book directly to the child. I watch what they do with it. Is that child manipulating the book I expect for their age? Are they turning it around? Are they taking that book and holding it out to their parent in that universal gesture of read to me? I've learned a lot about the relationship of that parent and that child just by seeing that. If the four-year-old runs up to me and grabs the book out of my hand, starts flipping the pages and say, oh, if you give a mouse a cookie, I love this book. I've heard language. I've seen gross motor skills and fine motor skills. They ran up. They turned the pages. I've heard that they know what the book is. They have memory. They have good vision. I've done most of my developmental surveillance, and it took me about 6 seconds. So I can use my valuable time in the room to focus on other things. I've said this before, and I'll say it again. In a well-child visit where there's no other identified complaint, I would rather walk in without my stethoscope than without a book. The book tells me more than my stethoscope will if it's just a regular old checkup.
What can we as a society do beyond this specific program?
Mm-hmm. I think we need to think carefully about our policies and programs and how they affect the first 1,000 days of life. Anything we do, someone should stop and say, how does this affect early childhood? I think there's some things that are obvious. You know, you look at, you know, funding for, pre-K or something like that, or home visiting programs. But what about the non-obvious stuff? We're going to build a highway. Does that highway cause any neighborhoods to get split from, like, the school? Like, are kids going to have trouble walking to school? And what's the effect going to be on their health, their mental health, all that? We're going to make changes to our medical assistance programs. How is this going to affect children? Well, we're not making insurance changes to children, but what about working parents? If their health care needs aren't taken care of, can they be the great parents they'd like to be because, again, of time poverty all of a sudden? All these things add up, and the Senate Joint Resolution 59, which passed the Wisconsin Senate and the Wisconsin Assembly unanimously in the last couple of months, lays out these principles, and I was very proud to be involved in that because I think it sets out at least a roadmap for how can we make policies and programs aware of the first 1,000 days and addressing those things.
Budgets are tight for government. Can society afford this?
I don't see how we can't afford it. We are seeing crises. The military is having a hard time finding recruits, partly because of obesity, but also because of lack of high school diplomas, lack of other skills. I mean, it's a national security issue when you look at it that way. I've had businesses say that they're actually finding workers with the right technical skills, but the wrong people skills, and they have to let them go because they don't know how to work with others. This is a crisis for all of us, so I don't see how we can afford to ignore the first 1,000 days.
You quote Frederick Douglass.
He said, "It is easier to build strong children than to repair broken men."
Dipesh, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
That is Dr. Dipesh Navasarya, an assistant professor of pediatrics at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, and a spokesman for Reach Out and Read, a program which makes literacy promotion a standard part of pediatric primary care. Dr. Navasarya was a keynote speaker last week at the Life Report Forum, right here at UW-Marathon County in Wausau, where our studios are located. The newly released United Way Life Report identified early childhood development as an urgent need and a top call to action for Central Wisconsin. In our studio to discuss the topic and Dr. Navasarya's comments are Dean Dietrich, an attorney with the Ruder Ware Law Firm and the chair of the Early Years Coalition of Marathon County, Julie Burmish, a speech pathologist with the Wausau School District and vice chair of the coalition, and Sandy Ellis, a consultant on early childhood development and president of Prevention Solutions of Junction City. I'm Glenn Moberg. We would also like you to join the conversation. Give us a call at 1-800-780-9770. 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742. Do you read to your children? When you were growing up, did your parents read to you? How important was that in building those family ties? How important was that in how you turned out as an adult and how you hope your children turn out? 1-800-780-9742, or you can put a question on our Route 51 Facebook page. Dean Dietrich, it's easier to build strong children than to repair broken men.
The comment and the quote is really kind of one of the watchwords we use with the Early Years Coalition, because our focus is to provide all of the tools that we can for our new parents to learn how to and to assist them in working with their new child to make them successful. We do think that this type of preventive work is an investment in our future, an investment in our community through the economic development results of that work that is very important for our community to be dedicated to.
Dean, you're a well-known attorney in town, and you're also the chair of this coalition. Why is this subject important enough to you that you're able to donate some of your time, your valuable time, to it? Why is it important?
It's so important, Glenn, because everything that is done today in many of our different aspects of society is to try to fix something that's already somewhat broken. And I've been involved in this initiative for a lot of years in very focused areas, and I came to realize that we needed to make sure that everybody in our community, every organization that touched those first 1,000 days, was working together, was working and using established principles and concepts to help the children be successful in those first 1,000 days. So I worked very hard with other people in the community to bring this coalition together.
Tell us a little bit about the coalition. How many people are in it, and how long have you been around, and what's your mission?
The coalition is comprised of about 32 organizations. There's about 60 people that attend our meetings or work for our different action teams. And our mission is to do everything we can to make sure that we are providing the tools for people in our community, especially new parents, to work with their children to be successful. The focuses extend from working on a program to help parents be the best first teachers of their kids, to make sure we have healthy babies when they're born, and to make sure that daycare is providing the type of programming that we need to allow children to be successful.
Julie Burmish, you're the vice chair of the Early Years Coalition. You're also a speech pathologist with the Wausau School District. That gives you a unique perspective.
It really does. I also have experience as an administrator with the Wausau School District that in running the early childhood programs and the pre-kindergarten programs, and the difference that we see with children coming into our program, it's very obvious to see, just as Dr. Navasaria said, in how the children came in, whether they were able to hold a book properly, whether they were able to turn pages. And as a speech pathologist, the language difference between children who have been talked to, read to, who have had limited exposure to television, their language skills are so much stronger than children who haven't had those opportunities. So it's very important to me in seeing that these children grow and have every opportunity afforded to them before they get to school, so that when they get to school, they can flourish.
And Sandy Ellis, you're a consultant that deals with child development issues and the president of your own company, Prevention Solutions of Junction City. Your reaction to Dr. Navasaria's remarks?
It was very exciting to listen to him last week because the emerging neuroscience that we've been basing our work on in these last few years really has supported the work that we began 20, 25 years ago, which was really based on our gut feelings. But we know now that children are born with the only organ in their body that is not fully developed at birth is their brain, and that brain develops and is dependent upon those relationships and those early experiences. And if those early experiences are positive and repeated, that lays the architecture for their brain to be developed in a healthy way that will lay the foundation for them to be ready to read and learn early language and really set the stage for those early indicators of school readiness. On the other side, if those early experiences are not positive, if they have more negative experiences than positive ones, that can actually harm the development of their brain and cause them to be less able to learn. Their language can be delayed and can lead to a host of adult issues later in life. And so it's really exciting to know that we're going to be focusing on the quality of those early relationships, whether it's parents, childcare providers, grandparents, or others. Kids have lots of relationships in their lives, and every one of them is important.
Sandy Ellis of Prevention Solutions of Junction City, Julie Burmish, a speech pathologist with the Wausau School District and vice chair of the Early Years Coalition, Dean Dietrich, who is the chair of that coalition and attorney at Reuter Ware. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We're talking about early childhood development, the importance of reading, a call to action for Central Wisconsin. And we'd like you to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Mrs. Kessler from Ironwood, you were on the phone, and apparently we lost your connection. Please call us back, 1-800-780-9742. We'll be back with more after this short break.
Thank you to the business sponsors who help support WPR programs. Businesses like Madison Gas and Electric, Al Johnson Swedish Restaurant, and Rittenhouse play a huge role in the success of WPR. For more information, go to WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Gimme Shelter Construction, committed to thoughtful design, sustainability, and traditional craftsmanship in building high-performance homes. Statewide builders of masonry heaters and wood-fired bake ovens. GimmeShelterOnline.com.
Today on Route 51, the importance of early childhood development and reading to your youngster, the importance of the first 1,000 days of life. It's an urgent call to action, as identified in the Life Report, which was released just last week, showing what our challenges are and our strengths are for Central Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Mobrig. Our guests today, Dean Dietrich and Julie Burmish of the Early Years Coalition, and also Sandy Ellis, who is a consultant who deals with these issues. We also heard an interview with Dipesh Navasaria, a pediatrician who thinks that his book that he brings in, a child's book that he brings into appointments with toddlers, that's more important than his stethoscope. We'd like you to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Mrs. Kessler from Ironwood, Michigan, who was on the phone before our break, she talked about how she sang to her son while he was still in the womb. She thinks that's when you should start reading, singing, and talking to your child. Anyone have a reaction to that?
Well, there is evidence that children can hear before they're born, and there is research that I actually tried when my grandson was born, a technique where brand new children, if a pediatrician talked into one ear of that child right after birth, and the dad or the mom talked in the other ear of that newborn baby, that baby would turn his head toward the familiar voice. And so it's fascinating to demonstrate that to parents and tell them he already knows your voice. And it helps to build that relationship. So reading early, singing early, it all sets the stage for that future relationship.
Dr. Navasaria talks about the importance of the first 1,000 days of life. Julie, what's significant about those first 1,000 days?
The infant's brain is more than 1,000 times capable of learning than a 40-year-old's brain. I liken it to the difference in creating new learning pathways between a bulldozer moving dirt to create a pathway than using a shovel to do the same thing. If we can give children the interaction experience that they need at an early age, those pathways are developing all over. If they're manipulating objects and playing and singing, that is developing their brain. If that time isn't used, the brain changes and it doesn't make those pathways as quickly. It makes pathways, but not as quickly. So we're really losing an opportunity if we wait until a child gets to kindergarten to expose them to things like reading and more interactions.
You know, as a pediatrician, a doctor, Dr. Navasaria said it's more important to bring a book into an office appointment with young kids than a stethoscope.
And I think the relationship he was talking about there is really the knowledge we have that in those first 5 to 6 years of life, when I said we were wired at birth for relationships, that's exactly right. And so children learn through the context of a relationship, and reading provides that relationship in addition to hearing sounds, so that will help them with their language development. As Julie said, those first 1,000 days are critical to that development because the brain is developing like a firecracker. It's exploding nonstop, and that slows down over time. In fact, there's research that shows the MRI of a 3-year-old who has not been stimulated early in those 1,000 days versus the brain of a 3-year-old who has been stimulated more normally, and the size of the brain is actually different. It's smaller in the child that has not had that stimulation.
And he's involved with something called Reach Out and Read. Anyone want to comment on that?
That's a wonderful program where children are given books in the pediatrician's office. And whenever a respected individual encourages children to be read to, and they model that how important it is, it's critical. Children should have a minimum of 50 children's books available to them in their home.
50 books.
50 books. And that way, you know, you're starting to build the collection. And the parents understand that this is important enough that during this short visit with my pediatrician, he's taking some time or she's taking some time to say, you need to read to your child.
Our goal, Glenn, is to be of assistance to all of the new parents throughout Marathon County and beyond that, to give them the ideas on how they can have that positive relationship with their young children. One of the things we've worked very hard with in conjunction with the Marathon County Health Department and United Way of Marathon County is to create the website raisegreatkids.org. And raisegreatkids.org is a resource for new parents, grandparents, physicians, teachers, anybody who interacts with children in those first 1,000 days, giving them guidance, assistance on how to do that. How should you read to your newborn? It's not just sitting down and reading. You got to do it so that they understand, or at least so they appreciate what's happening with them. I have two new grandchildren, and I've gone onto the website and looked at, okay, how should I be reading to my grandchildren? And I sit down with them, and we have wonderful times doing that. We want to give those ideas, give that information to all of the parents, all of the grandparents within our community. My view is giving that information, helping those new children be successful, will be one of the greatest economic development tools for our community, that we can be one of the best places to raise kids.
By the fourth grade, if a child has literacy problems, he says it's possible to turn that around, but much harder.
Not only is it much harder, you're stressing the people that have to do that. Again, I think that the teachers will all tell you that if we can have children who have had that background come into our classroom, we as a teacher can be more successful. We as a teacher can teach to a broader group of children who are at the same level, rather than having to make adjustments throughout the course of the day to children that are at different levels.
Well, it's not only difficult for teachers, but it's difficult for the children, according to the good doctor. He says that, you know, by the fourth grade, if a child doesn't know how to read or write well, that child already believes that he or she is a failure. They've got self-esteem problems, and that can just snowball later in life.
And that really refers back to the brain development and the information that we know about the developing brain. When those brains are being developed and those relationships or experiences that they're having are not overwhelmingly positive, there's actually a chemical reaction in the brain that disrupts the development of that brain, and it makes it less possible for children to have organized thinking going on. And so when they get in a school environment, it's like chaos in their brain. They're not able to sit as well. They're not able to process information because the pathways that were developed when they were younger have roadblocks all over in their thinking. And so it is more difficult for them if we wait until they're in fourth grade.
And moving to not only the impact on the child, there is a significant impact on the community and the educational system, because children who come to school with special needs are significantly more, there needs to be a larger investment in them. The average child with special needs costs a school district $10,000 a year. And we can prevent that by making sure that our young children get their needs met at a young age.
Julie Burmish, she's a speech pathologist with the Wausau School District, the vice chair of the Early Years Coalition. We've got the chair of that coalition, Dean Dietrich, with us. Also, Sandy Ellis, a consultant who deals with child development issues. We want to hear from you. 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Was reading something that was important to you as a child? Did your parents read to you? Maybe you had an older sibling, a brother or sister, who read to you. Maybe you took family trips to the library together. Did that help you develop as an adult? Do you read to your children? Is that something that you think is important and that you think will help them develop into better people as they grow older? Give us your experiences. We'd love to hear from you. 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. I'm Glenn Moberg. The topic today on Route 51, early childhood development, the importance of reading. These are things that were identified as urgent calls to action by the Life Report, which comes out every 2 years and looks at the quality of life and the challenges we face in Marathon County. Dean Dietrich and Julie Burmish of the Early Years Coalition and consultant Sandy Ellis, they're in our studio right now. And if you'd like to comment on your experiences growing up, being read to, whether you think it's important to read to your children, we'd love to hear from you at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Dean Dietrich, there is a correlation between our prison population and literacy. The New York Times writing a year ago, we can predict with depressing accuracy what a child's trajectory will be. You can predict how many prison beds you'll need in the future based on childhood reading scores today.
There is, Glenn, and when I first heard that comment, I didn't believe it. I was involved with a program here in town that worked with early years, and I just didn't believe that information. But I went and checked it out, and you're exactly right. And it tells us that those first 1,000 days are critical, and it has a cost. And the statistics have been studied by many different organizations. You could quote statistics all day long, but the rate of what they say is the rate of return for every dollar you invest in that first 1,000 days can return between $12 to $20 for that $1. It's preventive, and it's important, and it creates a tremendous return. Now, we spend so much money trying to address the difficulties that people are having, or what you might say is the broken child, and we have to do that. But the more we can look to and find the right techniques to provide the service, to provide the education, the background, to help people, help parents make their children be successful at that young age, the rate of return is significant. And that's a real important, I think, economic development tool.
So this is not just a public health issue and a moral issue. It's very expensive for society in terms of our crime rates and the amount of money it takes to keep all of these people in prison. In America, we've got the highest incarceration rate of any developed nation in the world.
We absolutely do, Glenn. And yes, it is an economic development concern. The expenditures that we make, you know, our goal on the Early Years Coalition is to develop all of the resources we can so that people are able to be helpful and assistance to those young children and hopefully cut down that cost. Now, we aren't going to fix everything, and there's a lot of components to it. There's certainly poverty, there's availability of jobs. I mean, there's a lot of components to this issue, but somebody has to start working on it because the rate of return is significant, and the more we can address it now in a preventive fashion, the better off and more successful we'll be down the road.
Now, the lack of reading skills and educational opportunity is something that helps keep poor families poor and rich families rich.
Mm-hmm. When we talk about the work of the Early Years Coalition, it really is about, it's more than just focusing services on children. As Dean said, there's a host of services available. It's important to understand that children reside in families, and it's in the context of the relationships that their brain develops and that they're able to have future success in school. So it's important that we not only work with children, but that we also are paying attention to where they live. So we need to work with those parents. And if parents had bad experiences growing up, it's likely that they will be parenting in the same way. We do what we know. And if what they know wasn't good and what they experienced wasn't good, that will be passed along to their children. And the same is true in child care. So we want to make sure that all those systems, we're not just working with children, but we're working with those providers across the board.
And it's you know, as he said, only 48% of parents read to their children, mm-hmm. their toddlers, on a regular basis. But it's worse for those in poverty. His statistic, by the age of four, the poorest kids have a 30 million word gap. Exactly what does that mean?
That means that interactionally, and this is not not through television or other media, children's brains develop based on the interactions that they have. And if a parent is stressed, if they're handling multiple jobs, they have fewer opportunities to sit down and talk about what a child is doing, talk with the child, read with the child. Parents who are more affluent have much more of that time and have the financial ability, if they are not there, to pay for high quality child care or preschool experiences that give those children exposure and interaction to adults who will talk with them.
Well, if you're poor and struggling, you know, you may be working two or three minimum wage jobs just to pay the bills, and you're not around for your kids.
That is correct. And because of that, we are seeing children coming in from poverty having weaker skills and needing to really, really intervene to help the children learn the language that other children come in knowing. And it's something that we need to work on as a societal problem.
Now, he suggests also that you can have other adults, grandparents, aunts or uncles or an older sibling reading to youngsters if the parents are unable to.
That's absolutely true. And I often assign homework for children to do with their older siblings because
really?
Because I know that the parents may not be available. Maybe they're working the night shift, or maybe they're working multiple jobs and are not able to do the homework, or they speak
Julie,
a different language.
You know your kids well enough that you're able to approach them individually and say, why don't you work on this with Mary or John in your household if that would be helpful? You actually do that?
Absolutely.
No kidding.
And I know many, many other teachers who do that, who have who allow older siblings to sign the assignment notebooks of their siblings.
You know, that's something that wasn't a factor when I was a kid, but we had a different nuclear family structure in society.
Yeah, it certainly, you know, the world has improved in many ways. We can all talk about technology and the value of technology and media, social media, and all those things. But the putting a very young child in front of a TV is not the same as sitting down and reading with that child, interacting with that child, working with that child to try and have that child repeat the words. That doesn't happen when you're sitting in front of a TV screen or in front of a computer screen. We can't discount the fact that technology has done wonderful things, but it's also imposed some conveniences on our life that are really not helpful in these first 1,000 days.
Well, also with the breakdown of the nuclear family, often have a situation where there aren't these extended family units. You don't have grandparents living in the same town where the parents and the kids live, or aunts and uncles, or older siblings sometimes are even out of the picture.
We need to do the best that we can for children, and part of that is supporting their families, too. If they're working two or three jobs and they don't have relatives in the area that they can count on, we can all lend a hand to support these parents. One other striking fact that I wanted to bring up that is many people don't know is that more children are kicked out of child care by the age of three than children who are kicked out of high school. That's a stunning fact when you think about that 2- and 3-year-olds can actually be expelled from a child care setting due to behavior issues. And when children are not getting their needs met, they will act out, and we've all seen it. But this can be so extreme that they actually are ending their relationship at a child care.
Well, let's look at some of the items in this long-term call to action in the Life Report. Raising the quality of early years child care, investing in programs that focus on early literacy, encouraging expectant mothers to take advantage of prenatal care, and offering parent education courses to encourage best practices and to share health care information, also raising awareness about the importance of a strong childhood and the negative impact of childhood trauma.
And what we're looking for, Glenn, is the business community to come together with us to do those very things. Wouldn't it be wonderful if a local business sponsored someone to come in on a Saturday morning and sit down and talk about some of those things with the young parents that work in that particular shop or that particular plant or factory, and make the business be part of the relationship with helping those new parents be successful. The discussion about raising the quality of child care, in fact, the Early Years Coalition has developed a grant program where child care providers can go back to school to learn more about how to be a positive and successful child care provider and to interact with kids. That's one of the projects we have. Another project that was actually just announced at the same time this program started was an initiative throughout our community to ensure that new children are born after 39 weeks so that they have the full gestation period before they are born, which is showing that they're going to be in a position to develop properly after birth. Those are some of our initiatives that we're trying to do.
If people want to find out more about the Early Years Coalition, what can they do?
They can look on the United Way website, and there is a special area where they can click and find out about all the activities of the Early Years Coalition. Also, if they go to raisegreatkids.org, there is information about the coalition on that website. But we certainly encourage everyone to go to raisegreatkids.org and get the very wonderful basic information at all the different age levels of children, from pre-birth to 1 year, 2 year, 4 year. And what it's designed to do is to be a ready site for people to go to get information on how to be successful with early years development.
RaiseGreatKids.org, and the website for the United Way is United Way MC, that stands for Marathon County, UnitedWayMC.org/life report. Tells you more about the life report. We're down to our last few seconds here. Julie Burmish, any final words?
The American Academy of Pediatrics says that that children should not be exposed to television before age 2. And the reason that is true is because from birth to age 2, a child needs to learn how to move, how to hold things. They need to learn how to talk. They need to learn how to interact. They need to develop relationships with people. So really encourage you to interact rather than expose your child to television.
Sandy Ellis, you've just got a few seconds here. I'm sorry.
Relationship matters.
All right. Short and sweet. We want to thank all three of you for being with us. Our guest today, Dean Dietrich, an attorney with the Ruderware Law Firm and the chair of the Early Years Coalition of Marathon County, Julie Burmish, a speech pathologist with the Wausau School District and vice chair of the coalition, Sandy Ellis, a consultant on early childhood development and president of Prevention Solutions of Junction City, and Dr. Dipesh Navasaria, an assistant professor of pediatrics at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health and a spokesman for Reach Out and Read. You can find out more about the new United Way of Marathon County Life Report at the website unitedwaymc.org/life report. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Kenny Loggins and Jim Messina. Remember to follow us on Facebook. If you missed some of this broadcast, it will be repeated 7 o'clock Friday night on 90.9 FM Wausau. You can also download it by tomorrow at wpr.org/route51. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. Until next week, we're heading out of town.